We're going to start off with a couple of background questions just to warm it up and get to know everything.
Do I have to answer? It won't get me divorced, nothing now, will it?
Oh, no. No.
Okay. All righty, if you insist.
Please,
I'm ready.
Can you please state your full name?
My name is Arnold L. Yarber. L is for LaVon. Arnold LaVon Yarber.
That's pretty. What do you do for a living now?
Well, I have this little barbecue pit that I've had for a number of years. And that's what I'm running at right now. And well, plus being retired from the university. And so other than that, nothing. I only use this on the weekends, the barbecue pit for the weekends, because we've been here approximately 45 years.
Is this really what you wanted to do?
No. No. This is not what I really wanted to do.
If not, why?
What or what?
Why?
Why? Well, this isn't the thing that I wanted to do. I wanted to be a chiropractor. And I went to school and I finished chiropractic.
What interests you in that?
What interested in? I was delivering ice here in Champaign, and the guy was telling me about chiropractic and that it was a way of curing people without medication. And I didn't believe him, so I got delved into it. Like, I'm not a believer. I started looking into things. And I discovered what you could do with chiropractic. And I knew I had a grandmother. She was older. My grandmother was around 70 years old at the time, and she had asthma, very, very bad. And I learned how to adjust her and to relieve her asthma. There's so many different things you could do. And I really got interested in it. So that was it. And so I never did get my license because coming up at that era, going to school, the chiropractic schools did not accept American Negroes. And you had to, so I finally found one in Dayton, Ohio, that about 20, 25 of us enrolled in it. But over in Ohio, Governor Lausche knew me very, very well. I sat and talked to him in his office, his governor's mansion, rather. He tried like the devil to help us get licensed, but the medical board wouldn't do it. So therefore, I never did get my license, all the guys that we finished the school. Mm-hmm. And we learned a lot from that.
Do you think that your education in chiropractic helped you become where you are now?
What do you mean, with barbecue, with this?
Yes, sir.
No, my dear, I don't think that. Whatever I'm doing, I'm just doing something because this was something that all during the Depression years, my grandmother did it. And so after time and being married, you had to have something to do. The job wasn't out there, so I decided on barbecue. And it worked for us. Doing barbecuing and selling hot tamales. People going to eat something anyway. Mm-hmm. Then after I got started in it, one time here in Champaign with seven other barbecue pits opened up. And so we weathered the storm all these years.
How long have you been living in Champaign, Urbana?
I was born here. As a matter of fact, 1, 2, 3, 4 blocks. I was born 4 blocks down the street here.
What year were you born?
Pardon?
What year
a
were you born?
A long time ago. like you ladies, you evade that one.
I was hedging up. Did you live in a mixed or segregated neighborhood?
Matter of fact, dear, I always lived right here in this area. It was always mixed. We had the street and all the houses had white, Negro, white, Negro over here, white, Negro down here, all around the corner, all around it. So that's all up around the corner, and we all played together all the time. So it was nothing new to me. It was just, we had a lot of fun. You know, you have your likes and your agreements and disagreements at times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then I went right straight down the street, 4 blocks, Gregory, on through there. And so I've always been in a mixed community.
Oh. Did you choose to live in this neighborhood, or were you guys now, had to?
Well, now, when you said, did I choose, you go where your parents go, dear.
Yeah, did your parents, were they forced to live here?
Oh, no. They weren't forced. No. This is at the time, that's during the Depression. Mm-hmm. You get houses where you could at the price that you could get it that you could afford to pay for. That's how, that was the Great Depression. And so, my grandmother, she was working. She only made $5 a week. We sold hot tamales. I'd be out there on the street selling hot tamales. We did everything that you could in order to make it. My aunt did maid work, and she wasn't making anything, but they put it together.
Did you attend church while you were a child?
Oh, yeah. You had to. We had to. There was no ultimatum. You went to church. Mm-hmm. And they're Baptist. Church. Yeah, I used to get a nickel to put in church until I started passing by a store, and I spent a penny, get a penny worth of candy on my way in.
Wow.
Until the fellow at the church, he caught me not putting that nickel in, the 4 cents, so he told me he was going to call my grandmother if I didn't put that nickel in church. So,
A penny worth of candy was a lot back then.
Hmm?
A penny worth of candy was a lot
back then. Oh, yes. You get soldiers, the soldier type, get 2 for a penny. Even if you have to get the donuts,
mm-hmm.
you can get 2 donuts for a nickel. And don't buy them day old, you get 4 for a nickel. So, yeah, this is true. That's what I used to have for breakfast. Going up to high school, stop by, get me 4 donuts. Spend a nickel, and then on the day I only had a dime then for lunch. And that lunch included in the high school and cafeteria, cost you about 22 cents. Mm-hmm. Never did have 22 cents. 15 cents is all I had.
What role did your church play in your life?
What?
How did your church affect your life?
I don't know. It was just so many kids at the time, and we all got on as a community. So I would say it taught us a lot of things, of togetherness. That's what I saw. That's what I really saw at the church. A lot of togetherness with all the kids because we all were poor at the same time. And by that being, we just depended on one another. All the little activities, all everything. But having you go on Sunday mornings, you see which side of town, this is called the west side of town.
Mm-hmm.
Although it's not until you get to Neal Street. Although you use the Illinois Central Railroad track as for east and west all the time. And so, you try to beat the kids on the east side.
Mm-hmm.
And we're on the west side, but you have to strictly on the east side.
Yeah.
And with the real. And so that, going to church, and then they used to have, like, on Sunday evenings, at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock, they had what they called BYPU, Baptist Young People's Union.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids from all the churches would meet at Salem Baptist Church. That's mm-hmm. when you get to see your girl, I guess. If you had one,
mm-hmm.
one of those things. And so that's when we'd be down there. And all the kids would meet there. That's on Sunday evening. That was it. Didn't have no place, no joints, or nothing place like that to go. So you'd be there. And you'd be talking about music and things, but everybody would be right there at Salem Baptist Church in the evening.
How did your church feel about racism and prejudice?
Well, see, during that era, we lived with it. It wasn't as pronounced as it is now. What I mean by that is this. We knew it was there, and you dealt around it.
Mm-hmm.
You really did. You really dealt around it. We know you didn't like it. There wasn't too much we could do about it during that era.
Mm-hmm.
Not really too much. Only best thing you could do is try to be a better person at that era. That's what we would strive to do. We didn't have all this, gangs. We didn't have all this. Show you just how the situation was. You didn't like your house.
Mm-hmm.
I live right here in this house. I take the key, lock the door, stick the key right there by the door. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. You know, many times I thought about this. You know, then you take the key, unlock the door, then put the key right back outside by the door and go on. No one robbed. No one. That was, things changed as you went along with people and situations. But, you know, you didn't like it, but that's what was dealt to you. Mm-hmm. It's a card that was dealt to us at the time, dear.
Do you remember any times that it happened, that you had to deal around it?
Had to deal around it?
Yes.
Oh, you constantly dealt around it, but you did it in a nice way. There was no fighting. Take, for instance, around night down here, dime store. Used to be the dime store right down here on Neal Street. Mm-hmm. You go in there and you could eat. It had an L-shaped counter like this. Like on that end was where, well, see, I've gone through so many different names. Mm-hmm. Colors, Negro, you make you wonder just where will you stand at the time. Mm-hmm. But see, at that era, the colored kids had to eat, and when you go down the dime store, down that short end, and there was no seats. Mm-hmm. But down this end, where all the seats were for the white kids in town. And yet we went to school together.
Right.
And so that's how that worked. No, you didn't like it, but you lived with it.
Okay. Now we're going to go to your childhood experiences.
My childhood experience?
Yes. Which school experience were life-shaping or life-changing to you?
Now, I don't quite follow you, dear, on what you're saying there. What are you asking me?
Okay. Like, when you were in school, what is something that really shaped your mindset or your beliefs?
Okay. Well, I think when it really happened, my belief was when I was in grade school, up here at Gregory School. We had a teacher, the lady, she was in charge, and she was a very, very, very fair lady. And I did something one time. We had the musical chairs. I remember going around, and when the music stopped, you could sit down. Mm-hmm. But I was on the other side of the chair where they had these arms on it. I jumped over the chair. And well, we had a teacher there that liked this little girl that I jumped over the seat and beat her in it. Mm-hmm. And so they had me all day long. And they didn't spank me, but see, those days you got spankings in school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the teacher, the principal, she would spank you. And so by the time I got through crying a ton, whatnot, she talked to me. It sort of changed me a whole lot. Mm-hmm. Never was a bad person. Kids just really wasn't that bad at time. We just weren't. But the fact is, you could tell the difference because of the structure of the situation in town. But however, that changed me a lot. And then I made a big boo-boo in the fourth grade. And everybody laughed at me. I've never gotten away. So some of the kids I've seen, they look at me, they start laughing, point their finger at me. I see them, and there's not many of them, about four or five, that's still living around there. And it was something that I said. I was being very honest. I thought that's what it meant. So I had never heard of a tree bow, the bow of a tree. So I raised my hands in the fourth grade. They wanted to say one of the sentence with a bow. Mm-hmm. Well, the only bow I knew of was the intestine.
Mm-hmm.
See, I never heard anything. Oh, tree bow.
Yeah.
So I made the very, very bad mistake. I put up my hand, and the teacher said, "Okay, Arnold." I said, "Well, the boy's bowels are running." Everybody in school screamed. Uh-huh. And I didn't know what they were laughing about, so I'd never heard of anything different.
Mm-hmm.
And then she took me over on the side and talked to me and just told me, because I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was in fourth grade. And that was one of the things that sort of changed me, to made me start thinking, and some of the other kids that I was there with as I said, we had integrated school when I was going to school. Mm-hmm. And that's where I've always gone to an integrated school. So that was one of the things that sort of changed me, made me think differently about people. And so I never let one person, black or white, tell me who I should deal with, who I don't, because that person is good. Maybe it's not even good for that person, but are they okay with me?
Mm-hmm.
See? So I never let no one else. And I would advise all kids, think for yourself. Don't let other people dictate to how you should feel about situations. Find them out.
Mm. That was it. Was there a time or a place in your life that you thought that everybody was separate but equal?
No. Wait a minute. Let me get that back. In a time in my life, I thought everybody was separate but equal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's quite a statement that they use, you're separate but equal. And I never did understand that. Everybody is separate but they're equal. I always just felt that everybody was equal.
Mm-hmm.
I never did get to the part of it that, well, we were separate, but even because right there he was thinking separatism, and how can you be equal if you're separate?
Mm-hmm.
That's how I looked at it. But my feeling had always been like this. I like you because I like you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like you because I don't like you. See, now I haven't got time to try to figure out your color, your religion, and all that. We got something. But then again, I always left room for the fact this, that we could get together, we could sit down and talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that has happened to me. You know, you come up with a situation, then you cool off, where you're that far apart, you come, after a while, you start getting closer. But maybe never get real tight, but you get there where you can understand and respect one another's feelings about situations.
Mm-hmm.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, sir. Were there ways in which you were treated differently from other students in your school?
Not when I was going to school. Well, only in the fifth grade, that one time when I jumped over that seat.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and one other time in eighth grade.
Mm-hmm.
I was a good student in school until I had eighth grade and I had math.
Mm-hmm.
In my math class, it changed me. I went into Miss McGinney, and we had long division and we had fractions. I went in the room, she said, "I don't have a seat." I said, "Okay." She said, "What do you want?" I told her, "I want to ask her something about this fractions." She said, "Okay." Three little white girls came in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sitting there, she's going to help, and they start talking to her. She put her arms around them and started talking and walked away from me. I sat there and waiting for her. She never did come back to me. And everything I had built up for love of people just sort of vanished from me.
Mm-hmm.
It really did, because from that moment on, I never was good in math. Everything else, I was good in school. Not math.
Mm-hmm.
I just could not get over that, what she did to me in that math class.
Mm-hmm.
I never could understand. I always held math as the cause. That was the culprit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but it really truly wasn't. But that's what she did. Miss McGinney. Never will forget her.
Hmm.
Matter of fact, he went to school with her brother.
You did? With her brother? Or the kid?
With her brother. And he was right here on the city council.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on the police and fire commission. And I always remember he tried to get me to do some things and I didn't like it. Don't come to me underhanded, trying to do things wrongly for him. Come straight to me and we'll talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason I wouldn't do it was because of what his sister had done to me. You know?
Mm-hmm.
That's holding a grudge, you know.
Trying to get back at her through her brother.
That's through her brother. You're right about that.
Yeah. Did you have any white friends when you were little?
Oh, yes. Excuse me. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. Oh, yes. Because I tell you, we lived in a mixed neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
We had one boy, Charles Reno. You didn't know if he was white or black. He was an Italian kid.
Mm-hmm.
We all did our dirt together. One of the things we would do Well, we wasn't stealing together. This is a true story, but it's clean. Mm-hmm. Up here, they used to have champagne. Used to have all the chickens would come in from downtown. Mm-hmm. They let them off right up the street here. Mm-hmm. And they would get loose. This would be the Nelson brothers. And Charles Reno, we called him Credio, mm-hmm. and myself was four of us. We'd get right up here on the railroad tracks. Mm-hmm. And as those chickens would get away, you know, escape getting all those things that had them in, mm-hmm. we'd run and grab them and put them and give them back to the man. At the end of the day, he'd always give us all the chicken. Mm-hmm. But this one day, he wouldn't give us a chicken. So we got our heads together. And Charlie went up the street. And he got a rope. We tied it on the back of a round thing that was, they had the coops up, they had the chickens in there.
That was holding them in?
Yes, and we had them stacked up on this flatbed. And we got around on the other side of the train. Mm-hmm. And so they come by and see us, and he tied it, I tied it onto one of those. We're always partners in crime. And we pulled the coop down. Chickens flying all out here. And I lived in this house, and we had a basement. Mm-hmm. Knocked the window out. It was a wooden window anyway, put coal. We were running around throwing chickens down in that basement.
Oh, my. Alive ones?
Yes, dear. Yeah. They were running. We were running, chasing them. Throwing chicken down there. And when we got through, we divided them up. I think Cecil and Ernest Nelson. They're down there, was two boys. Evidently, we must have had about 20 chickens down in this basement. So we ate chickens. So from then on, when they came around, and we'd go up there and help them to give us a chicken. You had to make your point. We made our point. It was wrong, but we made our point at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we have all the kids, we do it with ice, whatnot. So we had good times, and we had some bad times. Mm-hmm. Well, the interracial situation, that's what you were asking about. But we did pretty good at times. We all lived together. We were able to get along very good. That was it.
Did you play any sports with your friends?
Did I play any sports here?
Yes.
High school?
Yes, with your white and black friends.
Well, yes. I played at Champaign High School. I wouldn't go out for what we used to do in the street out here with the kids. We'd punt, see how far we could punt a ball from here down to, I could punt like the devil. So we'd go up to Douglas Park and play. Mm-hmm. Get the white and the Negro kids all together. We'd go up there and play. And so that summer I just decided, didn't too many go out for football in high school. Mm-hmm. So I decided I was going to go out for football my senior year in Champaign High School. So the guy went to Les Moyer. I said, Les, I said, I'm coming out for football this fall. He looked at me. He said, this is a lot of times you get a lot of hurts. You know? He said, you know what? You're going to have to be twice as good as the white boy to play now. Mm-hmm. I looked at him. I said, I'll play. Mm-hmm. So when school started, I was starting on the first team. I did the kicking, I did the running, whatnot, and so it was one other kid on there. We went down, another Negro kid, and we went on a trip to West Frankfort. I had never heard of it. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, dear, when I got off of that bus, they looked at me and saw me, and I would try to get back on that bus. What they were calling me. I couldn't get back on the bus, the other kids were coming off. Mm-hmm. And so, but we had quite a time that night. And after that was just one of the incidents. But it worked out okay. I played football, I played basketball. I was a starting guard in basketball. I was a first baseman and shortstop on baseball. I think I have a picture up under there when I was in high school, mm-hmm. on the baseball team. I think I got one right in there, under there. And so I did that. Only reason I started playing soccer, but it was something else came up. we start playing out in Douglas Park, so I wouldn't go in there. So I thought three sports that year was enough for me. Mm-hmm. I lettered in all of them, played first string on all of them, so everything's all right.
You played them all together?
Hmm?
You played them all together?
Well, as the season comes on, yeah, that's my senior year. I didn't do anything in my senior year.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the Negro kids didn't go out for sports right here during that time. Just didn't. They go up to Douglas Park,
mm-hmm.
where you play all the time. That's where we were. We were all the time.
Was it the same?
No. Not well, when it first started, everything used to be right up here on, it used to be the Lawhead School.
Mm-hmm.
And we played back in Lawhead School. Then they got that park over there, Douglas Park.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to have games, all the kids in town. Every night, you didn't see no fighting around here among the Negro kids. They weren't fighting, they weren't doing anything. Up at night, mm-hmm. if you want to fight, get out there on the field and fight and beat the other team. And then how that goes, and you brag about how we beat you and blah, blah, blah. That was mm-hmm. our fighting thing like that. Or playing football, really funny. Guys didn't have no gear for football, so we get socks, put rags in them, put them up here for shoulder pads and around your arm. But not that was it. Put socks with stuffing of some sort in it, put it around your knees because your knees gonna hit that hard ground out there.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids, I know they went over to one of the schools over there. They didn't have nothing but asphalt, rocks. That's how they played on their high school, on their grade school.
Dang.
So a little rough, but we enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
Guys be all skinned up, you know, just showing them my scar's bigger than yours.
Yeah.
Out there, yes.
What kind of things did your parents teach you?
What kind of what, baby?
What kind of lessons or
like? Okay. It was, well, my mother died when I was two, and my father lived in Chicago all the time. I lived with my grandmother and my aunt. And what they taught me was good fellows part of life. Respect people. Respect the elders. Respect your neighbors. And I lived on that. I dwelled on that. Well, just the respect for the other, my fellow man. And I think it got me by pretty well. I really truly do. Just respect for other people. I enjoy that, and I receive respect from people. I still try to do it. Respect mm-hmm. others.
Did they have any expectations for you?
Well, nothing particular, really. Because during that era, what they wanted you to do was be a good person. We didn't see that much. As for the Negro, wasn't that much out here for us to gain. It was things that should have been gained, but we didn't have the opportunity to do that,
mm-hmm.
like we would love to. And so much you just couldn't do. You just couldn't do it. Be a job, so many of the kids would be trying to get this one job. Because mm-hmm. there wasn't nothing for us around here.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that every time I go up to Chicago and just live with my dad, but I didn't do nothing up there. There was nothing up there because they were having time up there. See, this was during my teenager time. I was during the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
See, so at the time, it's not like it is this time.
Did your school experience in any way or put up roadblocks to your goals?
No, I don't think, personally, now, my dear, I don't think that a school can do it. I think you do it to yourself. It's going to always be things that you've got to climb over, little blockages. But if you stop and think, you can get over those things and get around them. People put a lot of, that's in all life. I don't care how you are, how high you are in big business or school, wherever it is. That's little roadblocks. But stop and think. You can master. You can get around them. It may not come out exactly like you want it, but you can succeed in it if you really try hard enough. You quit blaming it on another person. Didn't let me do this. Mm-hmm. I could have done this if, you know, just throw the daggum if out of the way and go ahead and do it.
Mm-hmm.
Or get caught dead trying to do it. You know, one thing. And you feel good about yourself too mm-hmm. from that. Well, things of that sort. I know that. So I know I remember one something that happened in the service during World War II. Things was going on real bad, and here comes an officer to me, grabbed me on the side, said, "Yarb," I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "I want you to go out," and we were in a dry dock. And I always thought about this. He said, "I want you to do something." I said, "What's that, sir?" He gave me $10. He said, "I want you to go out," and out, it was in New York City, "and buy me a fifth of whiskey." I said, "What?" Mm-hmm. I said, "Me do what, sir?" He said, "Go out and buy me a fifth of whiskey." I said, "I don't know where to buy no fifth of whiskey. Mm-hmm. I don't drink." He said, "But I know you can do it." Well, now, he put that before me. "I know you can do it." Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to do it now, just because he said that. Mm-hmm. And I found a way to do it. I went out, and I did it. I came back aboard ship. I went out, and I, how am I going to get this stuff across to this officer to let him know it can be done against all odds? Mm-hmm. I got it done for him. Went and bought me some tape. Went out to a place and bought the fifth of whiskey, tipped it around my leg, under my pants, and I walked wide-legged coming up on the ship.
Because they wouldn't allow you with it?
No, it wouldn't allow me. You're not supposed to bring it aboard ship anyway. Mm-hmm. But he's going to test me for some kind of way, and I'm going to show him it could be done. It had to be done. I wasn't going to let him get me. And I brought it back aboard ship. He never knew how it was done. He never asked. I just knocked on his door and said, "Here it is, sir." And he didn't know what to say. He just looked at me. I just turned around and walked away. Mr. Poop, things can be done, and we can do things in life. Whether you, we would say, "Well, it can't be done," but it can be done.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Do you think that that changed or affected you in any way?
What changed?
Like telling you that you can do this or trying to test you in any way?
Has that done what now to me?
Helped you or affected you?
Oh, well, no, it hasn't. That's me. I just believe in myself. And I believe if it's the right. Mm-hmm. Mostly things that the right things in life, I'm going to go along with it and try to do the best I can. And I have sense enough to know that the thing is wrong. I knew that was wrong, but I knew what he was trying to do to me. Mm-hmm. See, and I'm going to not let him get over it and let him know I'm not as dumb. Because during that era, they wouldn't let us, as Negroes, do certain things aboard ship. We couldn't do, during World War II, you couldn't fire a gun. You couldn't do this. You had to wait on the officers. That's all you could do. Mm-hmm. We didn't know enough about doing things. So this is how they had depicted us. And so I'm not sure, I'm smarter than you think we are. Mm-hmm. I can get things done. And so I guess life is somewhat like that now, I guess. I don't worry about it too much now, but I enjoy when they say you can't do it. Knowing they don't say it, but they know you can't, put you to test and say you can sit down and think. Don't think you can't, just say, take your time and think. There's got to be another way around it. Yeah. That's how I do things. I start thinking. Like they told me, I said, "You can't do nothing with barbecue pit because you got others." I said, "Well, I haven't tried yet, but I'll do it." Mm-hmm. You know, things like that's just how I feel about things.
Okay. What do you know about the integration of the schools and the culmination in Brown versus the Board of Education?
About the Board of Education?
Yes, sir.
Here in Champaign or all over the country?
All over.
Well, all I can say through my experience, I've seen one heck of a change. I've seen a tremendous change. And I was just looking at something that I saw. I've seen the change that was down to the south. And mm-hmm. up here, we'll see, by growing up here, I never did know so much about it as being a bad situation from the Board of Education. I guess they did have the things, highlights in it, but I didn't know about it, all that stuff. And the kids, we were able to go to school and attain a grade and go on to higher college. And then I found out, I went to South and I checked that, and I didn't like what I saw. I really truly didn't, but I don't know that much about the board. I haven't been that close to it. Mm-hmm. I really truly haven't, but I know there's been a tremendous change, that I know. I remember, like here in Champaign, the teachers, how they how the only teachers they had that were Negro teachers was over at Law Head School. That was the first place. Then at Willard School. Then Mrs. Wesley got in, and so she became a principal. And then I started seeing how little things start working out. And so I was past that then. After I got beyond that. So I, in all my life, I've never had a Negro teacher. Never had. So I can't see if a person knows it, they know it, wherever they may be. So I don't know what to say other than the fact is I've never been in that position. So actually, to try to make a difference. And the teachers that I did have, except that one, Miss McGinney, I'll never forget that woman. That's the only one. Other than that, I felt really good with the teachers. And like the kids who are coming up now, we have younger teachers coming up now. They're more worldly. And they're more readily can they see the situation that's happening. And I think there are more, as if you're thinking about, as for the white people, I think they're much more friendlier than they were years ago. They're not as afraid, you know, to do what they wish, what their mind tell them to do. As years ago, I don't think they may have felt like it, but they couldn't do it. I don't believe it.
Were there people around you talking about it? About the Brown versus Board of Education?
No, whatever.
They never
talked. Now my son, he's deep into that. I am not. But my son is deep into it. See, I am not. I don't very soon discuss it. Matter of fact, I never discuss it as a fact. But my son does. He and some of these guys, they get in talking about it. So I just listen to them on time. But I have never gotten those up because I've never really studied into it at all. Really, truly haven't.
Do you think by opening up your business or help somebody else that was going through a struggle?
Well, people have come to me and I've always really... You know, the problems I've had, you know, they're really funny. All the problems I've had in this business has been from the Negroes. Really.
From pulling down? From saying bad things and trying to pull
them
down.
And you know, you look at them and I look at them. God, there was so many of them. Had a guy, I did a dirty deal to him one time. But I didn't do anything to hurt him personally. Mm-hmm. I guess I did. But I mean... What I did was this. We used to do hickory wood kind of pitch we used to have. You had to get hickory wood. I asked, he had some. I said, where did you buy the hickory wood? Yeah. See, I was the first one to open up year round. No one else ever did that, just in summertime. So he wouldn't tell me where he bought his hickory wood. I found out where he got his hickory wood. I went and bought every piece, every stick it was in. I bought every dadgum stick I could get. And there was no hickory wood around. I had one, had a whole lot of hickory wood back here in the back, stacked up. And he came to borrow something, told him I didn't have any left. And it was sitting there, you could look at it. I said, I didn't have a hat for myself. Just because he wouldn't.
Okay.
That's right. The other thing I know that happened to me was about when I started the barbecue, I got nothing but negativeness from everybody. And police, I started the police sausage. You see, in Champagne, the only thing they ever sold was ribs. And that was in the summertime. You see, people have tubs, round tubs, and have a grated cross and be selling ribs. 75 cent a sandwich. I was 25 cent a bone. We got three bones for 75 cents. So I said, heck, you're going to do that in summer, wintertime. People eat ribs in the wintertime like in the summertime. So I decided I was going to try that. And I caught the devil from it. And then I decided what else was I going to try? So I decided to try beef. No one sold beef, but I didn't know how to buy the beef. Then on top of that, didn't know how to cook the beef. So well, when I got some beef and I got the worst cut of beef you could get, I had a heck of a time. Oh, God. Mm-hmm. So we finally got along. I finally got a slice. I was cutting it by hand. That wasn't getting me nowhere. Mm-hmm. So I finally bought a slicer. Then I got that. Then I decided to pull these sausages. I was in Chicago and I saw the sausages.
Yeah.
So yeah. See, and no one sold a pulley sausage yet. You didn't sell them in any stores.
Mm-hmm.
I happened to go one day over to a Lagna's. Mm-hmm. So Lagna's over here on Fifth Street. And I saw these sausages. Mm-hmm. So I asked, I said, where do you buy the sausages?
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't tell me. I said, well, I'll be darned. I said, okay. I never argue with people. I said, there's got to be another way around.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, I didn't argue. So I said, when can I come and buy some? Mm-hmm. Well, the truck will be in, she told me that Wednesday. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
7 o'clock that morning, I was out in front of our place, over here on Fifth Street,
mm-hmm.
waiting in my car, because I didn't know what time they came. So when they got there, I saw the guy coming. So I walked up to him, I said, you got pulley sausages?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, yeah, I got them for him. I said, okay. Where are you from? They were, oh, they made them right over in Danville.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, I'll be darned. So I went over to the place
mm-hmm.
where they made them. And I started talking to the fellow. Now, in order to get in with him, I bought a couple football tickets and gave them to the guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I could get in with him to get pulley sausages.
Mm-hmm.
So I had him to add garlic to them. I had him to grind and find her. Add a couple other things to the sausages.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it became a good hit.
Mm-hmm.
Pulley sausage. The other thing was I didn't know how to cook the doggone thing. I got them. Now what am I going to do with them? I'm going to cook the darn thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided, I was up in Rantoul. And I saw a guy cook hamburgers.
Mm-hmm.
And not on the grill, deep fryer. Say, see what you said?
Like French fries? Like you put it in the grease?
Just like the French fries. It had hamburger patties. You put it right in there. It's like anything. It'll go down and then rise up. They're done. And so I said, well, I got these pulled sausages and they got a casing around it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll try that. And it worked.
And you fry them now?
For 40-some years, I've been frying them. Yeah, that's on the way.
I've never heard of that. I heard of them on the grill and, like, in the water.
No, you haven't heard of the pulley sausages on the grill.
The little red things?
No, that's a different kind of sauce. But see, my pull like I get. They don't put them on the grill. Well, no one really serves them but me, more or less. And the other ones have copied it after me. What we've done. Yeah, so that's what we did that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was selling a whole lot of pulley sausages. Then some of the guys that opened up left, well, they used to go to Indianapolis, and outside of Indianapolis, and get sausages, but they were more meal in it than meat. I always mm-hmm. believed in getting the purest mm-hmm. stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Not imitation.
And yours had more meat?
Yeah, mine would be all meat. It would be 85% meat.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's what I do. And still today, they switch the amount of meat and beef, and I go right and get right on them about it.
Mm-hmm.
You charge me more, you don't be cutting down.
Mm-hmm.
You give me what I ask for. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I got them, they bring them to me all the time, now, the way that I want them.
Mm-hmm.
See, that is it. So that's, when you're in business, you got to, sort of going to keep your business a little bit, you got to, I believe in the customer. I don't believe out there trying to mess up the customer. You keep feeding them, giving them the right of what they want, if you can, you still got customers.
Mm-hmm.
And I just hate to see somebody mess up and start it. Well, I got a business going now. I can cheapen this. I can cheapen this product. I can cheapen that product.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with the pork. I started the pork. I didn't know anything about pork.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got it. The guy sold me pork. I was going to have pork sandwich. And what he sold me, when you get through cooking, it was just as tight.
And small. Yeah.
It was all tight. So I said, well, something else got to give. So I went somewhere. Oh, it was a guy here in town. He was from, it was a dentist.
Mm-hmm.
I asked him, I said, man, what's wrong with my port? He was from the southern part of the town. He said, you ought to go down to Harrisburg. There's a man down here, blah, 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 blah. I'd never been down to Harrisburg.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. So I got a friend of mine. We got in the car. We went down to Harrisburg. So I was talking to this fellow about port. He said, what kind do you use? I told him. He didn't say nothing, just so. I said, well, I guess he's not going to talk to me. Mm-hmm. So then he started talking. Later on, he said, we'll be open at 11 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw all these kids coming through. And I said, golly, Moses. And everything they sold was a pork sandwich. Pork sandwich, pork. I said, no ribs? No. Pork sandwich. Beef? No.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be darned. Sausage. That's all he sold was pork sandwiches. And so then I said, well, I'm going to try what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I started buying what he told me to buy. And it worked out.
And so now you sell all of them together?
No, I sell a lot of them. I sell beef.
Mm-hmm.
See, the beef sandwich, the pork sandwich, and sausages. And the ribs. Now, I started on ribs. I don't care about selling ribs. If I never sold one, it would be too soon for me. I don't particularly care for selling ribs. No, because what they have done, like with the ribs, they are, so the hogs used to be 250, 275 pounders. Well, they got these big 500 pounders. They're raising them large.
Mm-hmm.
Ribs coming out, bones, one bone, that's thick. Another one, they got two. So that'd be two bones. And the meat's that thick, but it's so full of fat that by the time you render it out, you're cooking, man, you haven't got nothing but a whole lot of fat down there. Mm-hmm. You're paid for solid weight.
Yeah.
See, that's that. I was looking the other day that they raised the price of ribs $1 a pound. I don't even wonder. I just shook my head last week. Just raised it and they said, well, it's coming back down. We're God.
Mm-hmm.
And it just jumped $1 a pound in 1 week's time. So business was cruel to you at times, but I enjoy it because I enjoy the people.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I do.
Okay. You did tell me your age. You went around the situation.
But eggs?
Your age.
Age, oh yeah. Age is on. How many, okay, let me tell you, how many women talk about your age? What's age got to do with it anyway?
Well,
you know.
Yeah. Okay. We've wrapped it up. If anybody has any other questions, yes. She has a couple of questions for you.
Okay.
In the back.
I'm 78 years old.
Are you?
Yeah.
You don't look like it.
Well,
you look younger.
Thank you.
No. Okay, she has a couple of questions.
Oh, this young lady behind me?
Yes, sir.
What you want, young lady?
You need to talk to
your
parents. Audrey, she needs my help. Hello, Mr. Yarbrough. I'm Tierra, and I have a few follow-up questions for you.
Okay, young lady.
Was there times when whites called you names at the football games that you really didn't like or whatever?
Oh, yes. Yes, there were times.
Are there?
They threw the big N on me.
What were some of the names they called you?
I just told you. Oh, like nigger, that's what they did to hurt you. See, the idea was to try to make you feel inferior, to say, well, to me, a lot of my buddies, we would just get angrier. But this one time when I went down, first time I went down south, they did that to me. I really felt bad. But as the night progressed, I started running all over them down there. One of those things, and so that was only two Negroes down there, me playing left half and my buddy playing right half. And I did most of the running that night. And we got in a fight down there. And all of my teammates, they helped me quite naturally, they did, and so, because they're from up here. And other than that, I didn't have too much problem in high school.
Also, did the whites at your school threaten, like, they would beat you up and stuff and have you, like scared to go home after school and whatever?
No way, my dear. No, no, no. No, 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 no. No, Not at all. You always have one or two people want to bluff you, feel like they want to bluff. But you can get around that. Jack one up real quick. Let them know, I don't fall for that. No, so no, I didn't have that problem. Only one, he was living right down the street here. My buddy George Floyd, and we grew up together, and he wanted to. So we had to get things straightened out. And as a matter of fact, I haven't seen George in 20, 25 years. Another day, I just happened to think about him. I looked at the phone directory and called him. And right down the street here. Yeah, that's where he was living. He's been sick, and I called him and talked to him. I haven't had no problems otherwise. Not like that.
That's good to know. Well, it was nice interviewing you today, and thanks for your time.
Hey, I enjoyed it. Anytime I can help you any kind of way, I'll be glad to.
Okay.
Any kind of way. Really.